Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome. Welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. But we're going to be talking about a different type of power this hour, and yes, that sounds a little rhythmic for good reason. The unusual, the unexplainable, that which we cannot physically necessarily touch. We know we've gone through an experience, and sometimes we're afraid to talk about those experiences because we don't know how people are going to respond to what we share with them. Sometimes we may think we're a little bit nuts because we've had these experiences. UFOs have been written about through eons of history. And my guest today, Dr. Stephen Cox, is a man who, he really has a different approach. And he's coming from a very practical, down-to-earth, researched positioning regarding the military and UFOs. His book is titled Military Response to UFO Activity. And Dr. Cox, I absolutely love the image on the front of the cover. It has this supposed alien face, but in the eyes there are the pictures of these beautiful jets. Tell us, Dr. Cox, by the way, welcome to the show. Tell us what it is that got you interested in UFOs. Was it a personal experience of your own?
Well, first, thanks for having me on the show. And yes, my experience dates back to the early 70s when I was on a Navy ship. And that's what started me into the UFO phenomenon.
Now, I want my listeners to know that you were a former federal law enforcement officer with the United States Coast Guard. You're an ordained minister. As you mentioned, you served in the United States Navy. You're a veteran of Vietnam. It wasn't just one sighting you had, though, in the Navy. Tell us what happened, how old you were, and where this was.
Well, my first sighting started back in late 94, early 95. I don't remember exact year. 74, 75. We were heading towards the coast of Vietnam. And a couple friends of mine and I were standing out on the fantail of the ship, looking down at the water, and we saw two lights coming in the water, but it was heading towards our ship. And they stayed on course. They went underneath our ship, past our ship, and went out of sight, but it all happened in a period of about 3 minutes from times we could see it on the horizon, which is about 7 miles away, to the time we lost sight of it, another 7 miles away in front of the ship.
Wow.
And we brought it up to the captain of the ship, and we were told that we didn't see anything. But we knew that even the nuclear subs couldn't travel at the speed they were moving.
Fascinating. When you got this kind of a response from your commanding officers, did that create a curiosity in you?
Yeah, it's one thing I always joke about is you don't tell a 17-year-old kid not to talk about things, and especially when it's something like that, you don't know what it is, and they tell you don't talk about it, then you know it's a secret, big secret.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to wonder through the years what it was.
So this was the beginning. This was the very beginning of your journey. Your book is about the relationship of the military with UFOs. And I was totally intrigued by your very first chapter in the second paragraph of the first page of that chapter. No, actually, it's the third paragraph. The question was presented, have military pilots ever fired upon a UFO? And the response was, yes, And I went, this is interesting. Tell us about in 1976 to 1980. And I think it was something even, maybe even later, but those two dates especially, those years, where that actually was recorded. What happened?
Well, first there was a fighting over Tehran in Iran, and they sent up their fighter pilots to shoot down this object. And every time the pilot went to lock on and fire, his missiles would malfunction. He was able to use his 50 cal machine guns and use any aircraft ammunition and shoot at the object. He shot approximately 60 rounds at it, and it didn't do anything. It just went right straight through. Didn't slow the craft down. Didn't disable the craft in any way.
And, also, there was something, and the Peruvian Air Force as well. Tell us what happened there.
In the Peruvian Air Force, they went to, at first they thought it was a spy device, so they were told them to go up and shoot down this spy device. When the pilots got up to the area, they found out it wasn't a spy device, and so they went to lock on with missiles to eliminate any type of a threat. And when they locked on with their missiles, their electronics components all malfunctioned. And at the last time when he was going to lock on, the UFO actually shot straight up in the air. So if he would have shot, he would have missed anything he shot at. And it's like they're one step ahead, they know what we're thinking. So every time we try to shoot at them, there's really no way we can hit them.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So it's the technology, the sophistication of what they have. I find it so fascinating because I do believe in UFOs. I do believe that there are those sophisticated environments of persons, beings, whatever you want to call them, that are really aware of what's going on. And I just find all of the different accounts that people have shared with me through the years to be extremely interesting. And I remember a talk show host that was in the Seattle area, how he had a guest on from Florida who was a researcher that had documented all kinds of sightings around the Caribbean and in the Florida area. And Jim French was the talk show host, and he said that when he was in the military, he had had a very real experience. He said, I know they are real. This is real. This is not make-believe. So it was fascinating. This was many years ago. And why was it that you wanted to put this book together? We have got so many books out there on UFOs. Why did you especially want to orient towards the military direction? Because this is so secretive. I mean, they have classified information I don't know that we'll ever find out about. There'd have to be some unique situation where somebody had access to it and would be able then to share it. Why do you think it's so tough in talking about this?
First, you did state one thing earlier that people don't like to talk about UFOs, especially ones they've seen. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do this book. Is I'm the chief investigator for the state of New York with a company called MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. And so I see every case that comes into the state. But I get a lot of people that really don't want to talk about it. And I always tell them that a UFO doesn't mean it's terrestrial or non-terrestrial. It just means there's something in the air that you don't know what it is. And hopefully there's people that can identify it and tell you what it is, whether it's a man-made object or not. And that was one of my biggest reasons of getting the book out there. The reason I went towards the military is because of some of my experiences I had while I was in the military and all the secretive that the military has. We all know that the Air Force used to investigate UFO sightings, then in 1969 they stopped, and with the conclusion that there's no such things as UFOs. But in their next breath, they turned around and said, the UFOs that are out there causes no threat to our national security. So they double-talked themselves.
Yes.
And that's why I went more towards the military line to try to get some people to talk about it, even military personnel. My son's in the Air Force, and he will not talk to me anything about UFOs.
That's something that you bring out in the first part of your book, that there was a group of former Air Force officers, that decided they were going to go public what they had been quiet about for decades, and that UFOs had visited the bases they were stationed on. When this happened, nuclear weapon systems malfunctioned. They have this knowledge about electrical fields and magnetic fields and how to process them that we do not. And I want to go back to the statement you made, not all UFOs are extraterrestrial. And I think that is what is most frustrating to people. When you think of the stealth bomber, when you think of so many things that were kept under wraps. And, of course, I think the Black Wing is just magnificently gorgeous. I just think it's a phenomenal, phenomenal plane. It's beautiful. But you can't pick it up on radar because of all the technology that they have. There's so much that is being tried to outdo another nation in the sophistication, the technology, et cetera, that it really is tough sometimes for people to be able to recognize that this may not have anything to do with something from outer space. It is something that's being developed here. Have you had experiences of your own where this was something you became aware of?
Where wound up being a military aircraft, there's been several sightings that I've had that at first I thought it was something that was not man-made because I never knew we had anything that could fly that fast. Back in the 80s, when the stealth bomber first came out, I remember being at an air show, and the guy on the radio was doing all the stunts, talking about everything going on. And he told us, if we look to the west, we're only going to get one glimpse of this. He's going to fly in low and shoot over a plane, but that's the new stealth bomber that came out. And I watched this little dot out in the western sky just grow to this huge object right above us. And then it just shot up and just completely out of sight. And it happened so quick that it was really impressive to me. And I started researching that and found out there's been a lot of cases that the stealth bomber has been picked up as a UFO. Our shuttle craft, being black on the bottom, triangular shape, gets picked up a lot as UFOs. And I found that really intriguing. But I like to let people know that it's okay. I mean, that's what we're here for, to help you identify what these objects are. And our military has come a long ways since the 1940s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And much of what was considered science fiction maybe 20, 40, 50 years ago now is really a reality. It is no longer science fiction. Now, you have a Major Parviz Jafari, who was a retired general with the Iranian Air Force, and this, to me, was quite interesting information, because this was an unidentifiable flying object. It wasn't something that any of our military forces around the world had developed. And they had super attack jets, and they were really scared by what they saw. What did Major Jafari tell you?
Most is he's the same thing that he said at that conference, that he was very scared when he locked on with his missiles and couldn't get a lock, everything malfunctioned them, that's a scary feeling to be in a cockpit flying, you know, 500-600 miles an hour and then losing all electronics. And he really thought it was strange that when he did lock on with his guns, it, when you shoot something with a 50 cal that's armor piercing, it's going to destroy anything it hits. And this just happened to go right through the craft, didn't create any damage, didn't slow it down. And it, as a pilot, you really get nervous, like, what is this technology?
Mm-hmm. EMP weaponry. I don't think anyone in my audience probably has heard that. Maybe if they're in the military, they're aware of it. EMP weaponry. What is it?
It's electromagnetism. Helping our, like our missiles and stuff, actually to lock on to the objects we're trying to destroy. And we can't get those to lock on a craft if we don't know what it is.
And it's really quite powerful stuff, because you say there's an abrupt pulse of electromagnetic radiation that results from certain types of high-energy explosions, especially a nuclear explosion, or from a suddenly
Correct.
Fluctuating magnetic field. And it, you know, there's all kinds of changing electrical fields that can be affected, magnetic fields, and it could damage all kinds of things, creating tremendous energy surges that could be very, very harmful. I really am intrigued with the fact that there's over 200 reports that have been made by pilots who said their planes experienced electromagnetic disturbances. And I don't know what year that was, but this is coming in from all over the world. You have reports by people from Japan, from Africa, from the United States, different areas in Europe. This is something that happens a lot more than we have been aware of.
Correct. Almost every nation has had some type of a problem with the EMF and, you know, causing problems with their electronics. And it's been big around here, but the pilots don't talk about it. They just picture it as sunspots and stuff like this. They don't really want to get into being an object that's not ours. And even pilots to today's, whether you're civilian or military, really don't like to talk about UFOs. They've always had that training that if you talk about UFOs, then you're not really certified to fly. And that's, I don't like looking at it that way, because they know what's in the sky. Our pilots are one of the best information, because they keep track of everything that's out there. And
well, you have yes. Mm-hmm. Major sure. General, he's retired, Wilfred D. Brouwer. He was with the Belgian Air Force and was the chief operations officer when a very unique UFO encounter took place over Belgium. Now, this was in 1989. The date is November the 29th. It was Eastern Belgium. 140 UFO sightings were reported. And you give a number of points. People were very specific. There was a commonality in all of these reports that were made. One, it was a huge triangular craft. They guessed it had a span of approximately 120 feet. There were powerful beaming spotlights. It was moving extremely slowly. Any plane that we have, any flying vehicle we have at this time would stall. It wasn't making any noise, and then it would accelerate to exceptional high speeds from next to nothing. They had 650 investigations, recorded more than 400 hours of audio witness reports. They even got a photograph. That is something that is incredible.
And that photograph is probably one of the the best photographs of any UFO, true UFO sightings out there. And that same object was seen in New York here over the Hudson River back in the 80s. It was a very popular sighting all over the world. That same design, the spotlights, the red light, the size of this craft. There's different reports all over the world on that craft.
It's fascinating to me how these craft are seen at times when maybe there is a stimulus for war. And we are hearing reports of people seeing these vehicles, and it's as if we're being observed. It's as if we are being monitored in some way. And there are so many people that have had their own personal experiences with this. What's the most unique story in your mind, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of them, regarding someone actually encountering the environment of and the people, or I'll use the word people, that are flying them? What was the most fascinating one that you've come across in your years of research?
My most fascinating is one that I'm still working on. It has to do with an abduction case where people swear they've been abducted during the night, some even during the day, but this is a whole family. It's the mother, all the kids, all the grandkids, nieces, and I've got a total of about 24, 25 people all in this one family. But you even have 1.5-year-olds waking up screaming that they're taking my sister.
Oh, my goodness.
And their descriptions are all the same. I mean, there's, you can talk to each other and get your story straight, but to get a 1.5-year-old that really describes something that a 50, 60-year-old person sees and comes up with the same exact story and what happened to them are different, but the description and everything is identical. It's pretty hard to do. And it's a case I've been working on now for about 3 years. And I probably got another 3 years worth of work to do on this case before it comes out.
Well, what was their story, and why did they reach out to you? What was it that prompted them to say, I need help? We just don't know as a family what to do about this.
Well, first started off as just a triangular craft sighting that the one person in the family stated they saw a triangular craft over such and such area. And, you know, through research, I was able to verify, yes, something was there. Radar, backtracking all the radar, there's no tail number or plane identification number. It's listed as an unknown. So there was something there that we don't know what it was. And about 6 months after I told her what was going on and what this is, she came to me and told me her personal stories of being abducted, seeing aliens in her bedroom, being taken out of the house, and her husband just not being able to wake up. And I started checking into that, and then she started opening up more, let me know about the rest of her family. And that's how all this came up. But the rest of the family has just recently decided we're going to talk about this because we don't know what to do. We've tried everything we can, and it's just happening more frequently. There's a 16-year-old in the family that went public with it, or tried to go public with it, and he actually lost his voice, and it's been about 6 months, he still hasn't been able to talk, and the doctors don't know why.
Interesting.
So it's really interesting.
Fascinating stuff. With a situation like this, we think of Wells' War of the Worlds. I think many times that people will see different programs. I mean, there's a new series that we have heard about here in Washington where it's a war between the aliens and the humans and this type of thing. There's a lot of drama with that. But there's a fear that is stimulated by that very kind of thinking. And we have two sides. There are people that just say, wow, this is wonderful. Why should we be afraid? Let's find out what we can. There's another side that says, oh, no, this is terrible. And I think many times when we feel that we are not having any choice, that someone else is making those choices for us, it is rather overwhelming. What do you tell people when they are contacting you and wanting to be able to deal with this so that they have some semblance of what they consider normalcy in their life?
Well, the biggest thing is sitting down and talking with them, but getting them to talk is usually the hard part. I go in and let them know some of the things that I've gone through in my life with aliens and my sightings. And usually that's enough to start to get them to loosen up and talk about things. I also let them know that, to me, the way I look at it, and same as you just said, there's two sides to it. Some are really scared, don't want to talk about it, and we're going to be destroyed. The other ones, you know, let's investigate it. There's nothing here to be afraid of. That's the way I look at it, is there's really nothing to be afraid of, because if they're out to destroy us, they could have done that from not even landing their crafts.
Absolutely.
That technology to travel that kind of distance, they can destroy a world without even being seen. So I think it's worth something to investigate it, try to find out some of their technologies and try to find out what they're up to. And I've always believed that we are being watched and we're being trained by other sources.
Interesting perspective. I wanted to ask you a question, Dr. Cox. Would you be able to stay with us for about another 15 minutes?
Yes.
All right, wonderful. We're going to take a break. This is Donna Sebo. And when we come back, we're going to share some more information about some of the activity that has been observed, recorded, and this is not woo-woo stuff. This is for real. And if nothing else, we ought to be curious. What is it? How can we educate ourselves? What can we do? So instead of coming from a positioning of fear, which is a manipulation tool, we actually ask questions of how we can observe, what we can do to bring that aspect of fear down so that it is not something that is going to keep us from seeing perhaps more of what we really should see. This is Donna Sebo. My guest is Dr. Stephen Cox, Military Response to UFO Activity. These are facts, information that I think we're going to get some more stuff that you'll be interested in hearing about. So don't go away, Dr. Cox. Thanks for staying with me. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me. An avatar is coming to the Seattle area. Lovingly known as Yogi Raj, he will be doing these upcoming events. Saturday, August 25th, 6 to 8 p.m., Healing and Enlightenment Workshop. This is free, an interactive event. Donations accepted. Location, Asian Resource Center, 1025 South King Street, Seattle, Washington, 98104. Tuesday, August 28th. Yogi Raj will be teaching and sharing his knowledge in a very special class at the Ascension Into Life Foundation. Visit ascensionintolifefoundation.org for more details. Friday, August 31st to Monday, September 3rd, Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji Retreat with Yogi Raj. Location, Fort Warden, Port Townsend. Each of these events will offer you the opportunity to learn about the ancient Himalayan knowledge for self-mastery called Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji. For more information, visit siddhanath.org. You can register for the event through northwestevents.eventbrite, B-R-I-T-E.com, or call for reservations 909-907-9605.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. My guest today, if you're just tuning in, is Dr. Stephen Cox, Military Response to UFO Activity. Dr. Cox, I'm really intrigued with all of the different persons that you have information on, the reports that they've made. Everything is documented. And you talk about a UFO over Paris, and it was an A320 Airbus on January 28, 1994. And this was seen and by more than one person. How was this report made available to the public?
When the pilot landed the airplane, he reported it to the reporting sources that pilots use. And through the Freedom of Information Act, those reports have become public information. And so it's nice to see there's pilots still out there that will report objects that they don't understand what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good case because it was seen by the pilot, the co-pilot, and the navigator. So it puts three people that really know the skies, and they weren't able to identify what they saw.
Nick Pope and the MOD. Now, Nick Pope is a man who is in media. He talks about conspiracy theories. He has had quite a background. He's in the UK. And this is a man that, when he became associated with the MOD, he had to sign a secrecy document that binds him for life. Yet you find when you listen to him, it's like he's dropping little hints here and there. Tell us about Nick Pope and what's the MOD, for those that are not aware of it.
Well, the MOD is the military defense for England. And he was worked for the MOD for, I want to say, about 20 years. I forget exactly how long he worked there. But for those years, he worked on the UFO projects. And he actually came out and let us know that a lot of the objects they are seeing are identifiable,
mm-hmm.
but they're still that 5% that they don't know what it is. And he's given a real good information of trying to bring out the information what we saw or what they saw. And it takes people in that high power to make it so people can talk about it. England is one of the companies or world countries now that will talk about UFOs. Unfortunately, the United States, they still say there's no such things, and they refuse to talk about it.
You mention a number of astronauts, U.S. astronauts. Buzz Aldrin is one, and Gordon Cooper is another, and there are more in your book. But I wanted to address Gordon Cooper first, because this was the message that he gave to the U.N., I believe that these extraterrestrial vehicles and their crews are visiting this planet from other planets which are a little more technically advanced than we are on Earth. I feel that we need to have a top-level, coordinated program to scientifically collect and analyze data from all over the Earth concerning any type of encounter and to determine how best to interfere with these visitors in a friendly fashion. Now, for him to make a statement like that at the United Nations, he was really setting himself up for a possible serious negative whiplash. What happened?
Well, the United Nations didn't do anything with his request and his reports. He was jeopardizing a lot. I mean, they could have taken away his retirement from the Air Force because you're still sworn to those secrecies. And he happened to talk about it and went public with it at the United Nations. And it was really nice to see that somebody in that kind of power that's actually been up in space, seen things that we haven't seen, and things that we have seen, he's seen closer, that this is somebody you need to take seriously. And unfortunately, the United Nations didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. He was a man who just had a real passion for telling the truth, and he authored a book called Leap of Faith, and that came out in the year 2000. And he said that as an Air Force pilot in 1951, he passed away at 77, that in 1951 he chased UFOs while he was based in Germany. And he talks about a lot of things that apparently were considered an embarrassment, but they felt that what he was doing, you know, if you ignore him, he'll go away. But Cooper didn't want to go away. He really wanted people to know that something was going on. There is always the questioning why the government is so secret about this. What is it, instead of being open and talking about it, why is there this attitude? Do you have an answer for that, Dr. Cox?
A little one. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't. I believe when the secrecy first started out back in the 40s and the 50s, you know, like Roswell and everything, that the government felt that there was a need for that secrecy because of the Roar of the Worlds talk show that happened back in 1935 with all the hystericals that went on. The government felt that this was going to really happen. But as time's gone on, people have talked more about it, we've learned more, that secrecy shouldn't be there anymore. It should be more open to the public. If the government has seen things, they should put it out there to help have the citizens watch for them and try to identify what these objects are. But the United States just refuses to do that. And I really get a kick out of what we think is the most powerful man in the world being our president. And Jimmy Carter was told that just because he's president doesn't give him the need to know about the UFO information.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always laughed about that because here we go thinking this guy's the most powerful man in the world. He should know everything that's going on with our government. But there's so much that the president doesn't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jimmy Carter himself had an experience He has spoken about that. So I really find it really quite interesting when these little tidbits come out. And you've done such a wonderful job with your book in documenting not just the cases around the world, but also individuals that have been very open with the public. They have not hidden information. Astronaut Buzz Aldrin, mechanical engineer, retired United States Air Force pilot. He was the pilot of the lunar module on Apollo 11, the first manned lunar landing in history. And he was the second human being on July 20th to set foot on the moon. And he said they saw an unidentified flying object, and it was out in outer space where they were.
Correct. There's NASA actually has photos of that, and it's actually leaked out onto the Internet. And NASA is trying to say that it's just space debris, but this object's moving at a controlled speed, and it's also making movements that an object just floating in space wouldn't make. And I really, with all these astronauts can see these things and risk their careers to talk about it. And I really have to respect them, because I spent over 10 years in the military myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really, in my book, I don't blast actually the military. It's the government that are withholding the secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Military members, I really respect them. I really like to see them open up and start telling more of what's going on. The countries around the world, though, I think eventually they're going to have to open up and start telling people what's going on.
I agree, and I think that openness is going to serve us better instead of nurturing ignorance and fear, which, let's face it, historically that's been done on so many levels in life anyway. And I really feel that your book goes a long way towards eliminating that and to making an awareness so that we do become curious, so that we do ask questions. Now, Dr. Cox, I know you're deeply involved in this, and you don't personally have a website that people can go to, but if someone who is listening to this show today said, I have had an experience, how do I get in touch with you to let you know what that experience is? What would they do?
Well, if they want to report sighting or abduction or anything that they don't understand, my solution would be jump on a website called MUFON, www.mufon.com, and there's report a sighting. If they want to actually contact me, if they get on MUFON and click on New York State, my name pops up, and they can get my email and my phone number, and they'll be able to, you know, talk directly with me. And I do have a lot of cases that people don't want to report through MUFON or any other cases, because a lot of people feel that the reporting agencies are still affiliated with the government, which isn't true, but because of all the secrecy, it's hard to get people to understand that we're not. We're volunteers trying to put an end to the enigma of UFOs.
Well, and I think it's admirable.
That's the easiest way to get in touch with me.
Well, that's wonderful. If the UFO is of interest to you, all of the history and various aspects of this experience, I believe you'll find Dr. Cox's book quite interesting, Military Response to UFO Activity. It's put out by Schiffer Books. Dr. Cox, I want to thank you for giving me extra time. Your information is so interesting, and you have some fabulous documentation that I think anybody that is of this area of curiosity, interested, and has a curiosity, I should say, this would be a book they should add to their library. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
And thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share. We're going to be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in?
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I just need your first name or initial, and then after that, well, we will be happy to share some time with you and light up your life with a little bit of insight. Quote that I wanted to share with you by Woody Allen, 80% of success is showing up. 80% of success is showing up. I thought that was a very good statement to leave you with. We're going to be entering into a weekend and the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, or actually it's the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. This is the last weekend. For those of you in Washington, I want you to just be out there. It is going to be incredibly awesome. We've got people, mask competition. There's all kinds of people from the royal court of Queen Elizabeth I and so much more. It is a family event and the temperatures are going to be perfect. So check out their website, WashingtonFair.com, to find out what you can do, where you can go. All of the information about parking, etc., will be there on the site, WashingtonFair, FAIRE.com. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. Who's coming up next week? Well, we have quite a lineup. On Monday, we're going to be talking about Scottish Ghosts by Ashley Rooney. And then on Tuesday, we'll be talking about innovation, how to build an innovative team, Chris Grisos. Then we'll be talking with Lou Paradise about health and how you can live a richer, more balanced life if you're diabetic, etc. It's going to be great. And then we're going to be talking with Gertrude Machi. She is from Africa. She's in the United States visiting. Her book is called Born on the Continent. It is incredible. It's a story about a woman's life and the world that she was in, how she left it, how she goes back to make a difference even today, and how she achieved success against improbable odds. And then a week from today, we'll be talking about Mark Twain, and this is information written by Ira Fistel. So we've got a very unique grouping of guests, and I hope you will join us, tell your friends, and it's nice of you to stop by. I appreciate your sharing this time with me. Aaron Francis wrote a short poem. I've got a magnificent photograph in front of me with these beautiful, beautiful flowers and broom mums and hydrangeas. It's just, this is an incredible garden that I'm looking at. And this is how the poem reads. The summer air is fragranced by flowers everywhere, and birds sing their hearts out for all the world to hear. It is a season of beauty to share. Boy, is that ever the truth. That is something that is absolutely a given. Now, I have a wonderful recipe here that's perfect for summer, for a summer dessert that just about everybody's going to love. It's an orange cream angel food cake. And I don't know that I'm going to have time to share it with you today, but I can tell you I will definitely do it next week. I'll share it with you sometime. But what I wanted to do was give you a little bit of so-called trivia. And this is about unusual occurrences, things that you wouldn't think would be possible to happen. And this one really was amazing to me. It was about a lobster. And yes, I know, I like the unusual and the far out. Well, this lobster was one of the last casualties of World War II. Okay, so what's the big deal? It was blown up inside an unexploded mine in 2009. That's the deal. Apparently, this lobster had made its home inside this 600-pound mine that had been laying dormant on the seabed off of the coast of Dorset, England, for more than 60 years. This is a lobster that was over 60 years of age. Did you know that lobsters can live to be over 100 years old? I didn't know that. I learned that when we moved to Seattle. These huge, huge, huge lobsters, you don't see them very often anymore, but they are really massive. They can live to be over 100 years of age. Well, this one was over 60 years old. They don't know exactly how old it is because the Royal Navy's bomb disposal unit tried to get it out of the bomb before they detonated it. Now, the reason they wanted to detonate the bomb is that there could be a fishing vessel, you know, just anything could happen, and it would suddenly blow up. It was very unstable. It had been in the quiet state for 60 years, but they said, we have got to get it out. Well, the lobster was adamant. It was not leaving its super home and was very nasty to the diapers. It had a pattern of biting it. So they said it was the last known casualty of World War II. Too, because they did have to dispose of it. They had no way of getting it out. And they're pretty big when they're that old. Also, a pocket watch was returned to a family of a Welsh sailor. His name was Richard Pritchard. Also, in the year 2000. Yes. Now, this is what happened. Richard Pritchard died 128 years ago. Mm-hmm, that's right. In the year 2000, a diver by the name of Rich Hughes had been exploring the wreck of Richard Pritchard's ship. It was called the Barbara. It sank in 1881, and he found the watch. That's right, found the watch. It took him 9 years of a lot of intense research to finally find the family of Richard Pritchard, the heirs, and give the watch back. What a story. 128 years, the descendants of Richard Pritchard get the watch back. Amazing. Life is incredible. All kinds of fascinating stories. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, count your blessings and realize that life is this incredible adventure that at times may bring you into experiences you never, ever thought you could have. Talk with you on Monday. Have a fabulous weekend. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.